Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thanks to everyone who supports Daily Tech News Show directly. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, October 19th, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, for the last time ever, I'm Sarah Lane.
From my Midwest estate, I'm Len Peralta.
And from a smaller estate on the West Coast, I'm Roger Chang.
You can hear back in the background there our guest today, Chris Ashley from the SMR podcast. How's it going, man?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. I heard you react to the last Studio Feline.
I know. I was like, what did I miss?
I mean, there'll be a new Studio Feline, just this particular room.
Will it be called Studio Feline still?
I don't know. I mean, I will take suggestions from our audience.
Will it be the same color?
It will be Studio Feline in spirit, no matter what it is.
We're going with different colors. We're going to switch it up to burgundy and gold, like my Redskins room.
No.
The 49ers are almost the same colors. You could probably do that.
Right? Yeah, that there is true.
All right, let's start today with a few tech things you should know.
Windows 10 Insider Preview Build 18262 has expanded the list of default Windows apps that users can now remove. The list now includes Mail, Calculator, Calendar, Movies and TV, and six other apps in addition to the seven that can already be removed in the latest public updates.
Brazilian newspaper Folha de São Paulo reports that companies contracted a service to circumvent WhatsApp's spam controls and send mass messages through to Brazilians attacking candidate for President Fernando Haddad. Brazilian law prohibits businesses' funding of campaigns and restricts how contact lists can be obtained for such purposes. The messages apparently began before the first round of the elections that happened on October 7th, and the second round, the runoff between the top two candidates, is scheduled for October 28th. The message campaign is being investigated by Brazil's Supreme Electoral Court, and WhatsApp, of course, is investigating as well.
OnePlus is moving the announcement of its 6T phone from October 30th to October 29th. You might say, why? That's just one day. Well, in order to avoid being announced on the same day that Apple announces things.
They at least want one press day before they get swamped.
Yeah, we're just going to move it.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the ongoing Bloomberg hack story. It's still being denied. U.S. Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats told CyberScoop he has not seen any evidence supporting Bloomberg's report of a hardware compromise of Supermicro motherboards. We've talked about it previously on the show. Coats did add, we're not taking anything for granted, and said, we're always watching. So he was hedging a little bit. In addition, not hedging was Apple CEO Tim Cook, who told BuzzFeed News regarding this story, there is no truth in their story about Apple. They need to do that right thing and retract it. Apple doesn't call for retractions. Even when there's been outright fraud about reports, they don't call for retractions. Bloomberg told BuzzFeed, Bloomberg Businessweek's investigation is the result of more than a year of reporting during which we conducted more than 100 interviews. 17 individual sources, including government officials and insiders at the companies named, confirmed the manipulation of hardware and other elements of the attacks. So the conundrum continues about who do you believe? There's the companies outright denying it. There are the government officials coming out on record in public saying, we have not seen anything about this. And then there's Bloomberg saying, yeah, but we've got 17 people who want to keep anonymous so they don't get in trouble, who say it did happen.
Man, this story is unbelievable because it's just not going away. And I'm glad it's not going away. And it's one of the first stories of this nature that I'm like, I truly do not know who to believe, because I get it. You know, it's a tough thing to come out in the public and say, no, this is not true at all, because if anything comes out and proves it to be true, your credibility is completely finished.
And potentially an SEC investigation, depending.
Right. But at the same time, you know, they're saying they got 17 people that's back in the store and a year of investigative work. So is it possible for both of these sides to be true? Sure. You know, somebody could have kept it a secret and kept it out of the, but you know, when you look at the history of China hacking into U.S. companies and stealing information and intellectual property, it's not that far fetched of a thing to happen. So I don't, you know, I don't know why people are pretending like this is so out of the realm of possibility, but I just don't know who to believe in this one.
Well, and it's also unusual, as you mentioned, Tom, that Apple would be speaking about this at all. The fact that Tim Cook was like, this is false and they need to retract their story is different than saying, if this happened, we had no knowledge of this, or just saying nothing at all. So the fact that Apple's on the kind of the offensive here is, it's unusual, and it makes me wonder. Not that I don't think that Bloomberg's sources weren't credible, but it's like, for Apple to do that, the company must feel very confident that they're not going to be, you know, left. I don't know what the metaphor is.
Found to be lying. Yeah.
Well, found to be lying. Yeah, exactly. And I guess perhaps if the company thought that somehow, you know, the supply chain would be hurt, their, you know, bottom line would be hurt, sure, you could do this even if you weren't totally sure that you were saying what you were saying.
Even then, though, that's super risky, because you've got shareholder fraud, you've got blown credibility. You just say something vague or you don't say something at all. And then the day this first broke, that's what Justin was doing, was parsing what little had been said to say, well, they left wiggle room. There's no wiggle room left. Apple does not ask to retract a story ever. So they are saying, we don't believe this story at all, which, if to fit the facts, the only explanations are the one that Zach Whitaker has kind of floated out there from TechCrunch, that the people talking to Bloomberg have not informed the other people they work with at their companies that this happened, that they've kept this under wraps. The other issue would be that the 17 sources somehow are lying to Bloomberg. And I guess the third would be that somebody's lying at Bloomberg, that the reporter is somehow hoodwinking his editors into believing sources that they
have. And all of those are far-fetched.
Yeah, exactly.
Scenarios.
They're all far-fetched. Right. The one about the reporter seems the most far-fetched to me, but it has happened before, so that's possible. The one about employees finding out a hack and being suppressed and not being able to tell anyone feels like the only one that could be really probable to me, and even then it's a small probability.
Story. This is something we will obviously revisit as it unfolds. Moving on, though, The Verge obtained a fee schedule for European device manufacturers who want to license Google's Play Store and other mobile apps. An EU antitrust decision requires Google to make search, Chrome, and mobile services available separately. After February 1st, 2019, fees will range from $2.50 to $40 per device, depending on the country and the pixel density of the screen. A source said that Google may offer to cover the cost for manufacturers who decide to include search and Chrome as well. The company previously made all three available for free, generating revenue from search, which it shared with the manufacturers. The fees for mobile services are meant to make up for lost search revenue caused by the absence of Chrome and search apps on a device. Google reportedly will not share search revenue with manufacturers who don't place Chrome in that application dock.
So the pixels, the pixels thing is just a stand-in for the price of the phone. More pixels per inch usually means a more expensive phone. So that's where that comes from. The rest of this is just saying, in the old way, we gave it to you for free because we made money on search, and we required you to put the Chrome in the dock where it would generate search revenue. And so we shared some of that with you. Now, since you have the option of not doing that, we're going to charge you to cover the cost we're losing from search if you only put in the Play Store and not Chrome and the search app. And if you don't put Chrome in the dock, we're not going to share the revenue with you because you're not going to be making us as much.
Yeah, for me, this is just all too little too late as far as I'm concerned, because they already destroyed the competitive market for other operating systems by letting them give it away for free for so long. Something of value that they gave away for free in order to hook in their services. We all knew what they were doing. We all talked about it, and they did it anyway. And now that all the other operating systems are done, now we're going to hit them with a fee. And yeah, so it's like, what's the point other than a money grab at this point? So I'm really annoyed with this story, because this is something that should have been done years ago.
So you don't think it was right for Android to be bundled in the first place, but you don't think that this remedy is going to increase competition?
Well, I don't have a problem with them bundling, but they should have been charging for the operating system, right? But they gave it away for free so they could pull you into their services, which I get it. You know, it's not a dumb thing to do. But the fact that they allowed them to give the operating system away for free, which allowed it to spread much more rapidly than Windows, and then, you know, which, you know, also then helped to kill off the BlackBerry OS. It was a problem back then. We all knew what was going on, and that's it. So we're down to two operating systems now for phones.
Facebook has hired former UK Deputy Prime Minister Sir Nick Clegg to be head of global affairs and communications. So he'll be global PR for Facebook. He is the former leader of the Liberal Democratic Party, or Liberal Democrats, the Lib Dems. They are the third party in the UK. He was deputy prime minister because the Lib Dems and the Conservatives had a coalition government a few years back. He will eventually, next year, move to California, so he's leaving the UK. He is not the first Lib Dem to work for Facebook. Lord Allen of Hallam is Facebook's public policy chief for EMEA, the Europe, Middle East, and Africa region. So if you're in the third party in the UK, your exit strategy appears to be becoming Facebook.
More importantly, let's hire somebody on the inside that can hopefully get these regulators and get these countries off our back.
Right. You know, and your somebody friends, who's right? Not polarizing in the U.S. He's a little bit polarizing in the U.K., but in the U.S., nobody knows who he is. So wouldn't be like hiring a Republican or a Democrat here.
Right. Right. Just get these people. I don't care what you do. Your job is to get them off our back. You know, we have these security breaches. We should not be bothered by these security breaches.
China's largest retailer, JD.com, plans to launch a store on Google by the end of the year to sell directly to folks in the U.S. JD already sells in the U.S. through a partnership with Walmart, but the Google platform offers a much more direct approach, obviously. JD also plans to expand its facilities from a few in Los Angeles to several fulfillment centers and eventually an entire network. Meanwhile, back in China, JD is opening its logistics network to customers for shipping parcels, starting with app users in Beijing, Shanghai, and Guangzhou.
So, yeah, essentially what JD's doing is saying we are doing what everyone always talks about Amazon doing, which is creating a logistics enterprise to help us get an advantage in shopping. We did it in China. It would be as if for U.S. people, or people in other areas where Amazon works, if Amazon started allowing you to ship with them like you do with DHL or UPS or somebody like that. That's what JD's doing in China, and they want to do it in the U.S. They want to not only start selling more things in the U.S. on the Google platform, which is a little more open than their partnership with Walmart, but they want to build a logistics center here as well, and one would assume that maybe their goal is eventually to become a shipper here.
So I look at this and I'm like, initially, like, come on, man. You know, you root for your American companies, but man, Amazon's getting way too big, and there needs to be some competition out there to kind of keep things in place. So I actually don't really mind this, and I hope other retailers step up and start getting their act together, because you know, Amazon was great. I'm starting to realize I'm really hooked into a lot of their services. So, you know, competition is always better than having one spot rule them all. So I'm, you know what, bring it on.
And it's a Chinese company, so there's always going to be that baggage around it. But I wonder if there's, you know, plenty of room for it to work within the United States with United States warehouses employing people here, that avoids that, or is it the fact that it's Chinese owned going to always be a problem for it.
Right. Yeah. Because obviously there's always the jobs aspect. So yeah, you're right. So if they bring warehouses and then they start employing people and you know that, how will that be received for the people working? I'm sure it'll be received well, but for the powers that be right now, who knows what they'll say about it.
South Africa's GovChat citizen engagement platform has been invited to set up operations with other governments. It's worked for South Africa's government and soon will be working for Democratic Republic of Congo, Ghana, and Nigeria. GovChat integrates its service into existing services. So they don't provide a new product. They say, what are you using? You got a website? You using WhatsApp? We will help you make better use of that with our backend platform to manage it. The idea being to help governments converse with their citizens better.
You know, you can never go wrong with trying to communicate with the people you're supposed to be representing. Now, are they going to listen to the people that's using this chat? That's the bigger question. But you know what? The fact that they're taking effort to at least put out a mechanism to facilitate the communication, you can't hate on that.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting situation. I think it's something worth examining too, see for sure. If there are, I don't know. In fact, I would call on the audience, who always has more expertise than I do. If there are other places in the world where there are similar systems being operated, I'd be curious to know about it.
Yeah, because you always still hear people, you know, doing their writing letter campaigns, and you know, lately you see people catching their senators at their restaurants and stuff to get their communication points across. But yeah, I'm not active that much in politics other than paying attention to what's going on, but I've never written a letter to a local representative, so I don't even know if we have an app here that allows us to communicate and put points across and facilitate conversations.
Some governments do, local governments do, and some don't. I don't know if there's one platform like that or not.
Yeah. So,
well, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. All right, a couple of stories floating about today illustrate a few trends we've been following on Daily Tech News Show. Huawei CEO Richard Yu told Digital Trends that Huawei is working on a foldable phone, particularly for 5G. So when 5G services come out, they want to have a foldable phone to go along with it. Of course, we talked about last week Samsung indicating it might show off a foldable phone at its developers conference in November. Huawei also developing a chip for 5G, the Belong 5G01. Along with foldable phones, another trend are these small, limited phones, often meant to be a second phone, so you don't always have to carry your big phone. Kyocera has announced the KY01L that fits in a credit card slot in a purse or wallet. It's going to stretch that slot a little bit. It has a 2.8-inch e-paper display, weighs 47 grams. It's 5.3 millimeters thick, so you're not going to be able to put another card in there with it, but it technically can fit in a credit card slot. It includes a browser, calculator, and calendar, launching in late November on NTT Docomo in Japan for 32,000 yen. That's about $285 if you want to convert it to US. So we've often talked about, like, well, phones are commoditized. What's the new thing for phones? And I feel like we're at the place laptops were when, if you remember, the netbook craze came along, and people were like, well, we've got to come up with a new format for laptops. And you had these limited laptops, sometimes with connectivity built in. A lot of times they ran Linux. This feels a little bit like that to me. It's, well, what if we do a different form factor, which with laptops eventually became the 2-in-1, which has become somewhat popular? Or what if we do a more limited version for people, which a lot of people, I know people who've emailed me directly, want. They're like, I need a phone that...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact... You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now, on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen. My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Has a long battery life and doesn't do a lot to take with me to various places. What do you guys think of these trends?
Well, Chris, I'd love to get your thoughts. We've definitely talked about the idea of the sort of second smaller phone, you know, where I think of it as like laptop is probably a better analogy, but I think like it's like a handbag, right? Maybe you have a small, maybe you have a big one. Depends on where you're going and what you need. But with phones, you hear more and more that people are like, I want something more limited so that I'm not using it too much. It's not so much that it's smaller. It's that it purposely has fewer features for the sanity of the human carrying it along with them.
So one of these technologies I like, and one of them I'm just like, and there's no question of which is which. I don't see the point of a device that does less when you can control what your device does by just not doing it. So if I don't want to do email on my phone, guess what? I'm not opening the email app. That one doesn't make a lot of sense. And the other reason why it doesn't make a lot of sense to me as well is because you could just do these things with your like a watch, you know, the new Apple Watch. You have 3G in it, so you can or 4G, so you can connect to, you know, your cell towers. You can make phone calls. You can run basic versions of the apps that are installed on the watch itself. You know, you can play music from it. You can hook your headphones up to it, and so it's relatively limited. So, you know, maybe the form factor is not necessarily what people are looking for, but it's there for a lot of the stuff that I think most people would want to do anyway. So, you know, to me, that device, it's not for me. But the other side of the house, which is the foldable device, and for me, the holy grail has always been, I don't want a phone and a computer. I want one. And if a foldable device that I could that's actually powerful enough to me to hook up to my monitor and I could do work from and I can put it in my pocket and roll out, you know, because I just took a trip to Orlando. I'm going to Memphis in a couple of weeks. And the battle to take less has never ended. You know, you got to take your extra battery. You got to take your various cables. You got to take your various hookup ports. You got to take, you know, your phone, your laptop. And then, of course, the power cord for the laptop is always massive. I'm tired of that. Absolutely tired of that. I want, you know, if I could have a little device that I could take with me and it's functional enough for me to go and do a presentation while I'm out. But then, you know, when I'm on a plane and I can fit on a plane and actually put the table down now and use the table. But that's awesome. But if
don't
I can
lean
just
back, don't lean back.
No, still that's not allowed. But if I could, you know, have a device that dual screen and I can just type and, you know, update my presentation or do, you know, whatever notes I need to do. That to me has always been the holy grail. And, you know, I'm hoping that Panos Panay from Microsoft pulls that off. You know, that's the one thing I've been kind of waiting for out of them, is that take that surface, shrink it down, make it both. And I can carry one device with me, or even if I still took a cell phone with me, that still would, I wouldn't mind having a bag that has two phones, you know, basically two phones in it.
So wait, you're just saying that why would anybody want two phones when one does less than the other? But a lot of your arguments here are the arguments I hear people making for why they want that second limited phone is not the same reasons, but it's the same general idea of sometimes I don't want to stick a big phone in my pocket, or I can't, and I need something more limited.
Well, let me be clear. When I say two phones, I mean two devices the size of a phone.
Yeah, but some people, the reason you were just talking about of not wanting to carry all of the adapters and the batteries and all of that, I think is one of the reasons that sometimes people want that more limited phone.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. But when I pack my laptop, right, that alone, if I, you know, when you have two phones, even if I said I have two phones or two devices the size of a phone, it's still smaller than my laptop. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's still, to me, I could even take a small, I don't even have to take my backpack anymore. You know what I mean? I could take a much smaller bag, you know, a messenger bag or something like that, and travel with that, versus having a backpack over my back, or everything just goes into my luggage bag. So that's the point I'm getting at. But, mm-hmm. you know, if it was good enough where I could just say, you know what, I don't even need a phone, or it is my phone now, you know what I mean? My phone is my computer. That's just something for me personally that I've been looking for. And I'm looking for expanded functionality on phones. You know, you saw in New Orleans, they started doing the digital driver's licenses now on the phone. Yep. You know, that type of, I want expanded functionality because I want the phone. I'm tired of carrying wallets. I just want to carry one device. And that is way more intriguing to me than a limited device. That does what my phone can do, because at the end of the day, you can always limit what you do on your device.
I want the haptic holograms where I have a limited device, but sometimes I can unlock it and let it do more, and it like put a whole screen and a keyboard up, but I still only carry around a little thing.
How about your watch has a hologram on it, so you can take it off, put it on your
desk. It just projects the phone everywhere.
And projects it, and then everything else is there. And maybe even we go OG style, and you can actually interact with the hologram.
Not even my watch, just implant it in my eye.
Okay, no implants.
we've heard about this sort of like foldable phone. That's going to be the new thing. We've heard about it so much more than we've seen anything in action. And when we were talking to Justin Robert Young yesterday, he mentioned the Sidekick as something that he equated Andy Rubin with, really sort of moving the needle forward. I was like, you know what? That's probably the last foldable device mm-hmm. that wasn't a laptop, you know, that was a smaller form factor where I was like, yeah, because I had one at one point and it was revolutionary to me. Well, that's not what a foldable phone would be now. It's like, we're done with the BlackBerry days, right? So it's either a form factor that has been introduced because we just need a new buzzword, and now it folds, or it's going to be something that actually does a lot of what, Chris, you say that you need, especially when you're traveling, that I feel like I totally can't wrap my brain around yet because I haven't seen anything that has made my life better.
Right.
That isn't, you know, a tablet plus like a keyboard.
I think foldable phones are a step on the way to that road. I don't know if they're the final version of that.
Yeah. Right.
Or perhaps not.
Yeah, because the Sidekick was super popular, especially, my son had one, and it was because they allowed them to type faster, you know. But now you can see them getting busy on a regular phone, you know, with the same type of speed. I agree with you 100% that, you know, just because it folds, that's not the reason why it has to be what people want. It has to be, it has to fold because the functionality it provides is bringing it above and beyond. And maybe it's just because there's more horsepower in that, on that second half, or maybe you can put it as a full screen and all of a sudden it becomes like a, six, 7-inch tablet for that use case. But then you fold it in half and then it becomes, a phone with the keyboard. I don't know. Or maybe you fold it completely over and it's just a regular phone. You know, that's the way I kind of, just off the top of my head, see that type of thing being that useful.
Well, we do get a lot of foldable phone stories in our subreddit. Thanks to everybody who participates. If you haven't, you can submit stories and vote on other stories, and they might get selected in the show or also get into Daily Tech Headlines at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Also on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. All right, let's go over to Chris Christensen of Amateur Traveler, who has a few tips for your looming and potentially expensive holiday travel.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. I had a friend who pinged me on Slack yesterday and said he's planning on traveling home for Christmas, but during December, the rates have literally doubled for flights. What do you do? One is don't travel in December. There just may not be better flight options. But if you're looking for the best flight options, I would start with a meta search engine, someplace that does multiple searches like kayak.com or TripAdvisor's flights. And then there are a couple of the booking sites that you might check out, like scottscheapflights.com, airfarewatchdog.com, or if you're doing a more complicated route, airtrex.com. There's also a new one which I haven't tried, which is people-powered, and that is flystein.com. Stein like Frankenstein. Hmm. If you're trying to get home for the holidays and you're finding expensive fares, these may be able to help you. But again, the best way to get cheaper fares is to fly when other people aren't. I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
That's good advice, Chris. All right, let's check out the mailbag.
Eric weighed in on our recent stories of streaming services on PCs, Macs, Chromebooks, and etc. Eric says, one service I know nobody's mentioned is NVIDIA GeForce Now. I got into the beta earlier this year. It basically changed how I played video games completely. My rig was just starting to date out. It was time for a new processor and motherboard and RAM. Now, I don't need to upgrade at all. I have a decent internet connection. It's 150 megabits nice. Per second down. And I would pay that gladly. So I'm pleased that it's free, at least for now.
Well, that's another one to add to the pile for sure. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate that. And let's wrap up by checking in with Len Peralta, who has been illustrating the show.
Yeah, you know, I'm interested in these foldable phones. I don't know if they are going to sell well, though, unless we give them a fancy name. And that's what this cartoon's all about. I'm calling them the Origami iPhone.
iPhone. Very nice.
I think sign that could be a big seller right there, Origami iPhone.
I like that you have a Steve Jobs-ish guy holding
exactly.
Hey,
the Origami iPhone.
This cartoon actually, there's a cartoonist by the name of Caldwell, and if you look up Pay the Man Clarice, which is what
so it's an homage.
Is an homage to him. You'll see what the original cartoon was. So it's sort of like a homage to Caldwell. So look that up. And this is in my store right now at lenperaltstore.com.
Is Clarice Sterling or just
no?
Totally different Clarice.
It's just the name he chose.
Josh.
So I looked it up before the show, and I'm like, I'm going to use that thing. I'm going to use that little tagline there. So,
well, thanks, Len Peralta. And also thanks to Chris Ashley for being with us this fine Friday. Chris, where can people keep up with your other work?
You can always check me out on the SMR podcast. Just go to smrpodcast.com, and we're in the iTunes store. Three cats, me and my two homies, talking tech and other topics that we just feel like talking about that day. So it's a lot of fun. When you listen, you kind of feel like you're one of us. So come on, check us out. You can also catch me on Twitter at Big Chris Ashley.
Folks, thanks for supporting us at patreon.com/DTNS. It's the thing that keeps us going and allows us to try new things. One of those new things has turned into its own show, the Monthly Video Game Briefing with Patrick Beja and Scott Johnson, a show designed for you. If all of those other gaming shows are like, I don't play that much, but some of them are too casual, this is right in the center. It's perfect for the DTNS listener who just wants to know a little bit more about what's going on in the world of gaming every month. Check it out at dailytechnewsshow.com/MVGB.
We love your feedback. Email address is an easy way to do it. Feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back on Monday with Justin Robert Young. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.